Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Empowerment Place. This is your host, Valerie Burrell. Grateful to be back with you all tonight with a relevant conversation. This evening, we have with us as our guest, Mr. Craig Connors, who is a manager at PCG Public Partnerships. At PCG Public Partnerships, Craig's role is to lead teams and projects to deliver excellent service to multiple stakeholders at optimal cost. Craig is a committed person. He's committed to helping states and managed care organizations design and operate successful consumer direction models of service delivery. Prior to joining PCG in 2015, Craig had roles that exposed him to many facets of the long-term support and services operations. He's worked with Medicaid and Medicare delivery and financing systems. Craig earned his MBA from Keenan Flagger Business School at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and a bachelor's in engineering and mechanical engineering from Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. Craig, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
My pleasure. My pleasure to be here, and thank you very much for asking me to be on the show. It's a real honor.
Thank you. Well, what we want to talk about tonight, Craig, is a marketplace leader. And for my listeners who've been with me for a while, they sometimes hear me talk about marketplace leadership and sometimes don't really have an understanding of what marketplace leadership is. So let me sort of help you all as you're chiming in on tonight. Marketplace leadership is that leadership that you find on the job in the secular setting. very different from an entrepreneurial role, but you have to have leadership there as well. But you look at marketplace leadership more in those settings where there are corporations and larger organizations. And the reason I've asked Craig to join us on tonight is because I watch people, and I've had the great pleasure of watching Craig in a leadership role. And so I just wanted him to come this evening and sort of share what he's gone through to get to the place that he is the type of leader he is. And maybe he can share with us some of the things that are important for those who aspire to be leaders. What are some of the necessary steps? Are there particular mindsets that one needs to have in order to be effective in the role of a leadership? Those are some of the things that we want to know, Craig, your input on these things that affect leadership in today's marketplace. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts and what are some of your suggestions?
Well, that's a big question. And, you know, in terms of, you know, what makes a good leader, how do you become a good leader? I mean, that's a really hard question to answer, you know, that satisfies everybody. I don't think you'd see such a massive industry built around writing books and doing other things, trying to tell people how to be leaders if it was easy. So there's no magic formula or silver bullet I can offer. Hopefully what I can offer to those listening is just a few things that I've, you know, learned personally, whether or not they're actually applicable to your own situation. You know, if I had to start answering the question, I guess the first thing I would answer personally is that any success I've ever had as a leader, and I will say, and we can talk about failure too if we have
mm-hmm,
time.
Absolutely.
You know, every leader is going to fail, and you know, there's many valuable things that you can learn from that. But back to any success I have had as a leader, you know, I think it goes back to really just having an empathy and an understanding for the people you work with and that you lead. You know, to me, to be a successful leader, it's not thinking about yourself. It's thinking about the others, you know, the like I said, the people you work with. And, you know, I'd be happy to elaborate on that, but having that humility and that empathy is really task number one.
That's a good start. that's a good start. And I'm just going to pin that because in my educational endeavor, I have a bachelor's degree in management and organizational leadership. And one of the books that we had to read, Bays, was Becoming a Leader by Warren Bennis. And It's a classic leadership book, but one of the things, one of the three things that he lists that's important about leadership is the need for leaders to provide direction, that they are trustworthy and they want hope, that they want to exercise or show forth some type of hope. So in what you're saying, having the empathy and the understanding of the needs of the people that you're leading, that is a paramount to me as well, that if you're leading individuals, you have to care about them as much as you would care about yourself. So I applaud that. Yay. So go ahead. What else is it that you found? You spoke about failure. I believe that failure is a part of progress. It is a part of success because you never know what you have the capability to do unless you try. And in trying, sometimes we do fail.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think the best things, everyone's going to fail sometimes. I mean, you do learn, and I think everyone who's listening has probably failed at one thing or another and will agree with me that that's often the best way to learn is by failing. So although no one wants to strive to fail, and nor should you, you know, when failure does occur, and it could be at a small scale or a larger scale, when failure does occur, rather than beat yourself up, or what I've seen some leaders do, which is, you know, lash out and try to blame others. It's the first thing I always try to coach myself to do is look in the mirror and say, what could I have done better? You know, when either I failed personally or my team, you know, failed to do something or to meet some deliverable, it's always, what could have I done better as a leader? Because like you said, the people you're leading look at you to set the direction, look at you to set the tone, look at you to set the example. And if your first response to failing is to lash out, or to find others to blame, you're going to lose all credibility and trust. You know, in addition to that, you know, going back to, you know, what makes successful leaders, and just to continue on that thread of, you know, humility and understanding, you know, the needs and desires of your team, is really to understand the strengths and weaknesses of the members of your team too. You know, getting to learn what they're good at, what they need development on, and utilizing those talents when there's a time-critical task or deliverable to come up with. But then also, you know, working with them to develop the things that they might need some improvement on, and just communicating frequently about those things. So there's probably a whole lot of themes there, you know, built into that response. But we can talk a little further on whichever you would like to. But
sure,
it's just a few takeaways.
One thing, utilizing strengths and weaknesses, and that ties in very critically with development. Sometimes people have shared with me as a leader, because much like you, I'm very passionate about those that I've been tasked to lead. I'm very passionate about them having understanding and them having full knowledge of expectations. And if I'm not articulating to them what's expected, then when things don't get met, when we don't meet a deadline, when something falls through the crack, I can't readily get at them when I didn't do my piece. So I understand that, you know, we have to, as leaders, communicate. I think we have to communicate effectively what things are needed. And when we are able to recognize the strengths and the weaknesses in those that we lead, I think that there has to be a trust relationship that they will know that when you come to them, even if you have to come to them at a time where there's been a mistake, that you're not coming to belittle them, but you're going to allow that to be an opportunity for training and for change, so that should this arise again, I'm now going to develop you so that we'll get a better outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, it's a lot easier to say that than to do it. And it's something we have to remind ourselves of. You know, I'll just kind of use that as another, you know, potential, you know, pitfall, something we all have to look out for, which, you know, I oftentimes have to remind myself of, is, you know, when you're leading, especially when you're in a management or leadership role, and there's a difference, I believe, but I'll just use them interchangeably for this example. when you're in a middle management role, so which I think is really the hardest type of role to be in, which is what most leaders and managers in the corporate workplace are in, a middle management role where you're expected to produce while you're also expected to lead a team, right? It gets really easy when there's something that's high stress or high, timely deliverable is due. It's really easy to say, you know what, I'm just going to do the work myself because I know how to do it and I can probably do it faster and I can quality check it myself. And, you know, when you do that, the short-term deliverable is met and the product is met, yet you're doing a disservice to your team. You're showing your team a couple of things. You know, you're showing your team that, you don't trust the work that they do. And also, it's not just the trust again. It's you don't think that they have the skills that they need to succeed. And what message does that send? Maybe that sends a message that they need to, you know, go find something else to do, or that they're not going to be, you know, looked at next time promotions come around or something like that. So anyway, to summarize, it's, you know, again, if anyone's just taking little tidbits or pearls away, it's pause before you do something, step in to do something that clearly someone else on your team has it in their roles and responsibilities to accomplish.
I like that. I think
it's hard for all of us. It's hard for all of us. Any of those on the phone listening to this who've worked with me, you know, it's difficult. But the more we remind ourselves to do that, the better our teams will perform ultimately in the long run.
Yeah. Pause. Pause. Okay, pause. Yeah, I'm going to hold on to that one, Craig. I'm going to hold on to that one. I work hard. Here's the scenario. I work hard. I consider myself a quick learner, and I want more responsibility. I want to learn how to lead. How do I make that happen? How do you get noticed? How do you get noticed by leaderships in a positive light to let them know that you're ready for more? What are some of the things that you as a leader would look for in someone who wants more?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I guess a couple of different answers. You know, the first is, how do I become a good leader? And again, there's many textbooks written on this, and great shows like yours can be listened to multiple times to get little tidbits. You know, really, some of the best way to become a good leader is to emulate the qualities of different good leaders that you've been exposed to or who you've observed. And conversely, if you've observed or worked with bad leaders, you know, think about, why is that person a bad leader, and try to avoid doing what they do. Again, it's easier said than done. And, you know, some of us, it's just we're fortunate or unfortunate to be, to work with good leaders. That doesn't happen. I've probably, you know, if I look at all the different roles I've had, and it's been, you know, quite a few now, I've probably had people, if I had to categorize bad or good, I've probably had overall more bad leaders that I've worked with than good. I've been able to try to at least, channel that to good by thinking about the things that I would do differently if I were in their shoes. You know, that said, any decent traits I do have, I can probably link back to a couple of good leaders I have worked with. In the past, I worked with a couple of just absolutely outstanding leaders, and, you know, one I can think of was a captain of the submarine I was on when I was in the Navy. I don't think you mentioned I was in the Navy, but, you know, that was many years ago. You know, that was a couple decades ago almost, and I still, to this day, think back about, how would that leader handle this situation? Or did we ever encounter something like that before? And I just think if you're exposed to someone like that, that can really make a lifelong, you know, meaningful difference. Well, so again, that's something you don't control, though. So if you're listening and say, well, yeah, that'd be great, I wish I had a leader like that that I could emulate, you know, what can you do about that? One thing you can do is, of course, you know, you can find literature and articles and things on great leaders and read about them. And that helps, but I don't think it really you know, it really,
it doesn't,
you know,
necessarily
gives you
give you the impact that you're looking for. It'll give you education, but it won't really give you
right.
the tangible impact that you need to initiate change. Understood.
Right. It's working with someone directly. And therefore, you know, one strategy I would suggest, if you're in an organization, especially a larger organization, that you might be in one work unit, but there's multiple different work units and locations, one thing you can try to do around self-improvement is strive, you know, to find out, well, who are considered the good leaders in my organization? And even if they're not in your work group or your unit, you know, talk to others about, how do I get exposure to that person? Maybe I take on a special project, you know, in that person's area. Maybe I asked to just do kind of informal meetings, you know, with that person, just to kind of get some tips from them. Just sort of, even though that's not your manager or someone necessarily in your unit, so take the extra step to reach out to those who in your organization who are recognized as good leaders. I mean, another thing I would almost guarantee is any organization that's successful, and by successful, you know, you can define that several ways, whether it's financially
mm-hmm.
successful or socially successful, et cetera, from a social responsibility standpoint. I would venture to say just about any successful organization is going to have some successful leaders. They just wouldn't succeed as an organization if they didn't. So seek out those people within your own organization and figure out ways that you can get yourself exposed to them, again, even if they're not in your unit.
That's good. That's good. That's good. I think one thing, too, for those who aspire to be leaders, I think that you have to be willing to do more than the status quo. I've encountered several people who want more responsibility, who want more exposure, who want more money, let's just be real. But mm-hmm. they are content with just fulfilling status quo, and they're not preparing themselves for the competitive market. There are a lot of people who have the ability. You know, some people argue the fact, do you make leaders or are you born leaders? And we could go back and forth with that on either side of the coin. But one thing that I know it's necessary, that if you desire to be a leader, there are some things that you need to do to help make yourself competitive mm-hmm. in that market. And some of those things will require that you do the extra work, that you spend the extra time. And as you stated, take the time to get the exposure, to learn your leaders, to learn the tidbits and the nuggets that are needed to help you in your journey to become the leader that you desire. One thing I know to be certain, and as you stated, Craig, you know, we learn from those who have been impactful in a not-so-nice way, along with those who have really made a mark on our lives, that we fall back to occasions that we experienced with them and we hold on to it. So I think, listeners, tonight, one thing that you have to really think about within yourself, if you are desiring to be a leader, you have to look at yourself and determine now, am I willing to do all that's necessary for me to be a leader? Because leadership is not always easy. It's not always popular. It's not about just being with your friends and helping your buddies. It's not that. It's so much more that's required of someone that's a leader, and you sort of tagged on it, and we really don't have time to go there, but there is a difference between a manager and a leader. If you just want to manage, that's a whole different piece, but if you're actually going to be a leader, there are some things that you have to be right within yourself. You have to be ethical in your practices. You can't be judgmental as a leader. You have to take the time to know the people that you work with and know the people that are under you, that you are imparting into their lives. You have to be in a place where you know that you're being watched. Leaders are being constantly watched. It's like being a parent. Some kids will say, oh, my mom and dad are so mean. You hear those same things coming from employees about their bosses. Oh, they're so mean. Oh, they don't understand me. Oh, it's the same type of relationship. There's give and take, and there are expectations that necessarily have to be met. They have to be met if you're going to be successful in the role as a leader versus a manager. So those are good. Those are good.
I think that was great. I totally agree with everything that you said. And, you know, becoming a leader in your organization, since that's what we're talking about, leadership spans, of course, many different dimensions of our lives. You know, when we're talking about being a good leader, we're talking about all dimensions of life, not necessarily just at work. But while we're focusing on work, and while we're focusing on work and keeping the scope to that and looking, you know, how do I become a leader, a respected, you know, individual within my organization who, you know, strives for promotion, you know, or a higher level of responsibility or higher level of pay within my organization? What are some of the things that I can do in order to get there? And I think you said one thing that's important, Valerie, which is, you know, you have to work at it. There's good organizations, you don't become a leader by just sort of being there and, you know, doing just what's asked of you, you know, day after day after day. You know, think about, strategize about, but you also can't do everything. You know, you have to strategize about what's important to my manager, what's important to my organization. You know, where are the gaps or where are the weaknesses that we're experiencing? And what can I do to help fill those gaps? Maybe a process isn't working the way that it should be working. What can I do to offer support to help that process improve, get that process improvement project done? You know, or maybe there's upset customers. And why are they upset? Was there anything I can do, you know, to help my team address the root cause? You know, have that questioning attitude. Ask yourself what you can do. And sometimes it's not actually about, you know, working 20 hours a day, you know, and staying late. That's not the idea. The idea is to work smart, to critically think, and to use targeted strategies at what you can do to help your unit. But again, the takeaway is just doing my job, you know, in my what's in my written roles and responsibilities is not the way to do it. Now, let me just go ahead and qualify that with one thing, which is, you know, you can let the pendulum swing too far in the opposite direction. I think we've all probably worked with people who we would consider the overzealots, right? The people who want to be involved in everything because they think that's the way to promotion, who don't care about stepping on their coworkers' feet just to get to that next level, right? Who need to know everything and be involved in everything. There is a limit. There's a balance, and there becomes a point where you can, for lack of a better word, you can irritate your coworkers and your, you know, your superiors by getting a little bit too aggressive. So I just put that qualifier in there. You know, I don't want the message to be go get involved in everything and do everything. I mean, that's great if you can, but don't do it at the expense of your coworkers or your team. But do, like I said, do think critically about what can I do to make us succeed better. Whether it's your direct manager or the highest level executive in your organization, that's what gets noticed is when the business performs better. And we say, wow, how did that improvement happen? Well, Valerie, you know, she took the initiative to get this done. That's how to get recognized and get noticed.
That's good. I totally agree with you. Because some do feel that if I get involved with everything, if I'm doing everything, then you find yourself stressed. And then when you're stressed, then you're on edge, and then you're on everybody's nerves, and then people are not happy around you, and so that's not a good look. But one thing too that I think that's very important when it comes to being a leader or aspiring to be a leader is that you have to understand your purpose for doing what you're doing. Too often people enter a workplace and enter a role, a job, merely out of the fact that they need income. And we all do. I mean, we need to pay our bills. We need to live. But I think sometimes, too, that when you allow the wrong things to be the driving forces behind why you do what you do, you end up doing a disservice to yourself and those who are connected with you. Because when things start to disconnect, when the flow is not there, when it's money driven, when money's purpose, and that's what's driving you to do it, you know, if the market changes and you can't get that bonus and you can't get that raise, then the work is affected. And when you know that you take a job to be a leader, but that's not really what you're equipped for, and you just take that job because you need the money, you still end up hurting yourself, and too often you hurt those that are connected to you because you carry the stress of trying to maintain something that you're not designed for. You carry that home to your spouse or your children or your, you know, whatever. It has a way of sort of tumbling down and doing more harm than good. So I think that, you know, when we're looking at the marketplace leader and we're looking at some of the attributes, I think that you would want to make sure that this is not something you aspire to do because it looks like it's a grand thing, but know that you are specifically designed for this work. Not everybody is a leader. We all mm-hmm. have some attributes and abilities to do some leading, but not everybody is the big boss. Not everybody's designed to be the manager. And so I just want to caution you to be careful not to desire something that you weren't really meant for, because it may be more harmful to you than good.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. I don't know that I can say anything a lot better about that. You know, one thing I would suggest from a practical standpoint, because I think, you know, just talking with and working with people for years, I think everyone gets, you know, they get philosophically what you just said. Yeah, nobody wants mm-hmm. to be miserable, get up in the morning and hate going to work. You know, they want to do something they'd love. You know, why can't we all just be artists, right? Or be musicians?
Yeah.
You know, turn our hobby into a livelihood. And you know,
yeah.
we all know that that sounds wonderful. And you know, for a lot of people, it's just not practical always. And
right.
So,
right.
You know, I often suggest to people, well, think about it from a different way. It's not find your ultimate love and go make a living doing your ultimate love. But within your constraints, whether they're financial or geographic or whatever, find tasks or things that you enjoy doing that really, you know, give you, you know, pleasure, whether it's intellectual or otherwise. And look within your, you know, your perceived confines, within your current
mm-hmm.
organization, say, and say, is there something in my organization that I could do, even if it's a different job, to use those skills that I enjoy doing? So, for instance, if you're a customer service person and your job, because that's what was paying well at the time, is to answer phones and listen to people, you know, whatever, call with their concerns or their complaints, and you just really don't like it. You just do not enjoy that type of work, talking to people, you know, you internalize a lot of their complaints and issues or whatever. And again, as you know, I'm just using an example. If that's what you do and you don't like it, but really think about, well, what do you like doing? And if you like actually working with numbers and solving problems, you know, don't think about how can I go out and be a mathematician, you know,
mm-hmm.
or a computer programmer. That might be unrealistic given your current life situation. Think about, within my organization, are there jobs at which I could use numbers and, you know, be analytical? And I'll guarantee you there probably are. There are probably analyst
yeah.
positions. There are probably, accounting assistant positions. And what I'd urge people to do is think about that. Not what job would be the greatest thing, but what tasks do I enjoy? And go seek out and pursue those types of jobs within your own organization. And that's one way to get to what you were just talking about, Valerie, without having to do this massive life and career change. And talk
Absolutely.
To your manager. Talk to a leader that you respect about, hey, I really want to work with numbers. I don't want to be on the phones all day. You know, what's the path? How can I stay with this organization and do that? So anyway, not to belabor the point, but just to for anyone
great.
Listening
that's
who
great.
Might be in this, think about that.
That's great. Well, Craig, I thank you. This has been a great dialogue, and I know that the listening audience live now and those who will listen in the archives will definitely be able to pull something from this to help them in their journey of becoming that successful marketplace leader. I thank you so much for your time, Craig. As I stated before to me, you are an excellent leader, and I'm grateful to have the opportunity to work with you and learn from you. Join us again on Sunday morning at 8 o'clock a.m. for another empowerment teaching. Until then, we say good night and we love you all.
Good night. Thank you.